Welcome to the Creative Shift Podcast. My name is Dan Blank, author of the book Be the Gateway and founder of WeGrowMedia.com. Today, I'm very excited to share my interview with illustrator Anna Raff. She, among other things, has illustrated quite a number of books for children. And today, we take you through her career and really the incredible creative shifts that she's made. These are the kinds of stories I love sharing in this podcast. When someone pursues one career, one path in life, and then they listen to themselves, they take a pause and they say, is this really what I want to be doing? Anna did that. She made a really big career shift. And what I love is she digs into the very, very specific ways that she took that risk of what she did to recognize that within herself, that she wanted to be doing something else, how she began exploring that without first risking everything, and then what came after that. And we also dig into what is the reality of like that now. And I think this is something that I sometimes miss hearing in stories of people's creative life. They may talk about the rah-rah transition, but when you are doing work that you love, when you're out there on your own as, let's say, an illustrator or an author or something like that, it really is a series of transformations that you have to make. And Anna is just so wonderful in how she describes that. You can find Anna at annaraff.com, A-N-N-A-R-A-F-F. All right, here is our conversation. Hey, everyone, this is Dan Blank, and I'm very excited to be chatting with Anna Raff today. Welcome.
Thank you, Dan.
So you came to me through a mutual friend who knows that I just love these stories of a creative shift, of that point where someone makes a very intentional change, and one that even if it's inspiring and successful, is often filled with like little bits of risk and little bits of, you know, really harrowing decision-making that we sort of gloss over when we're like, oh my gosh, my friend is doing this awesome thing. Right. So I appreciate you kind of taking us through your story today. You know, I'm never sure where to begin sometimes in someone's career, because I love really, what I'd love to do is kind of flesh out the before.
Okay.
You know, that initial, well, here's what I was doing, you know, when I was in, and I don't know where we start when you're 8 years old or 18 or 28 of saying, you know, growing up, this is where I wanted to go. And kind of here's that early thing when I first chose my career or I chose my interests.
Okay. That actually makes some sense to start. I can do the earlier part more abbreviated and then get into the guts of the stuff.
Uh-oh, there's good stuff coming.
Yeah. Well, I grew up always interested in art and drawing, and in a family where that was very much encouraged, but not from parents who are artists at all. But they always really made sure that part of me was being nurtured and stuff. And when I was applying to...
Wait. I already have a question.
Yeah. All right.
Why? I mean, I talked to so many people, and a lot of people I talked to grew up in households where, yeah, if the parents were creative, it trickles down. They appreciate
yeah.
it. But where it's not, there's literally the opposite. There is so much judgment and boxing in of people. If they weren't in a creative field, why did they care about that after you were, say, 5 years old? Because when you're before five, everyone likes creativity. But
that's a really good question. Okay, so I would say that they never worked in a creative field necessarily, but they're creative people. Whether it be through food, or I remember my mother making things like finger puppets and my father always doing funny doodles. They never, you know, channeled that so much into a profession for themselves. But their side life has always been very rich with fun, creative things that they have done.
That's interesting.
I say that, you know, but in a limited sense.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. So once I established sort of an interest or showed some kind of an ability, just made sure that actually when I was in elementary school, I was very fortunate that we were in school districts that had art classes, and some really good ones. And we also lived in a town not too far outside of New York City. I grew up in Connecticut. And on my street, there was a New Yorker cartoonist named Donald Riley. And I was friends with his two twin sons. And then, you know, every once in a while, there'd be like a Donald Riley played in a blues band or a Dixieland band. He played the trombone. And he would get together with other New Yorker cartoonists. And sometimes it would be happening on our street. And like we would be able to go across the street to the neighbors who are hosting this. And like my mom would be like, all these guys, they draw cartoons for the New Yorker, which I thought was amazing.
How incredible is that?
Yeah. So, and then, you know, various other people, my mom would always say, oh, you know, that person's an artist, just like you, things like that. So I always would be like, oh, this is my thing. Whereas my brother was much more of a words person. I was much more of a pictures person.
It's funny because I think, you know, obviously there's an enormous amount of luck in where you grow up. And if you happen to have a trombone playing cartoonist down the block who does jam sessions. But I think it also speaks to people, whether when it's they're 18 or whether they're 38 or whatever age, saying, hey, I grew up in a not creative area. I live in a not creative town, but I'm going to do the horribly difficult thing and move to Austin or move to Portland or move to Brooklyn or move to that type of thing where when you're surrounded by people who create, it gives you a much bigger sense of permission.
Yes. Yes. That's very true. Very true. And, but just to say, it didn't mean that I really knew how I was going to translate that into a career. So when, even though I was taking all these art classes, and again, even through high school, we had like a silkscreen class. This was like, it was not a poor school district. I'll say that much. It was Westport, Connecticut. So actually legendary for having a lot of New Yorker cartoonists, but also has always had a very rich art scene. And I don't know if they still have it in the high school, but they had drawing classes. We had figure drawing classes and we had silkscreen classes. So all that stuff, all through high school. But when it came to applying to colleges, I didn't really know how I was going to make that into a career. So, and it was like the late 80s. So, you know, there was some sort of recession looming, and there was a big recession around then. And I was trying to figure out, well, I don't know how I'm going to make this into a career, but I'll go to a liberal arts school, and then I'll have like a safety net because I can always fall back on my, you know, book smarts, for lack of a better term. Maybe we cut that out.
No. Staying in. No joking.
I'm more of the verbal side of me rather than the visual side of me. So I chose to, I applied to very few schools. There weren't that many that had like a good, a liberal arts school that had a good art department on top of the academics. And I was really lucky that I got into Connecticut College. And they actually had graphic design classes. And I always sort of knew that was the area I wanted to go toward. My mom had learned how to do paste up related to her freelance job. She was a fundraiser, is a fundraiser.
Can you give me the really short description? Because I've done this. What is paste up? Because people are not even going to believe this existed.
Sorry, that's jumping into the lingo. Paste up is pre-desktop publishing, where you use a desk with a T-square, you wax or rubber cement the type to pages, to boards, all that lined up. You know, you feel like a little bit like an architect, but you're not. All these things that get to go to press without, you know, with overlays, and this very, very technical thing. It's something I actually miss and lament with my friends who
Well, there's something to note here about, because I did that. I worked at an ad agency and we had the wax machine.
Oh, yeah. The wax.
And physically now, like we throw stuff in PowerPoint or Canva, every little element was a cutout piece of paper.
Yes.
You had knives everywhere, so you're always cutting yourself. But then there's a machine and you're not fixing it. Like you're fixing it with this goopy wax.
Yeah.
And then like, and then whatever it is, we'll get to take a photo taken. That's what's going to go in the newspaper. And it's like, this almost like a craft, even though it was so boring and there's wax involved.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was really wonderful. And I actually did do that into the earlier part of my career. And I honestly miss it because there's something so meditative about creating, they're called mechanicals, creating a mechanical with overlays and doing it beautifully. There's such a pride you can take in that sort of thing. But just to say, my mom, for her, she'll probably correct me if she listens to this. For her fundraising job, she was sort of a jack of all trades for some of her nonprofit clients, and she would sometimes do these brochures for them where she would actually do the pay stub. So I was seeing these tools around and thinking, if I can't get a job in the arts, I could probably do design, and that way you get a staff job somewhere where you get insurance and you get, you know, you have a regular paycheck, all that stuff. Because being an artist with a capital A, you know, really scared me. I didn't know how I would pay my bills.
One point on that too is, because I'm remembering this distinction for myself, when you say artist, you are lingering by yourself, having to not just have a creative vision, but all the business life stuff is on you. Mm-hmm. When you have a job, a role like a designer, you're a part of a larger machine, and there's all that safety net around you too. I mean, yes. That's the way I've thought about it.
Yes, exactly. So I graduated from Connecticut College with a liberal arts degree, and thought I was, you know, the bomb. I really thought I was going to be like land an amazing job in New York City. My goal was to move to New York City and work in design. And I still have this rejection letter from still what is probably one of the best, most well-known design firms in the world called Pentagram, because I thought I was going to get a job at Pentagram. I don't know what planet I was on. I barely could design anything. And I had taken a few classes at Connecticut College. And so I wrote them this letter and thinking I'd land an interview, and they wrote me this very nice form letter back, but it was on such beautiful stationery.
Even the rejections are beautiful.
Yeah. And I kept it because I thought this is something I needed to get this. First of all, it was on beautiful stationery, but also just, you know, I needed that message that don't assume too much about yourself. Like, you know, a little humility goes a long way. Anyway, so then my first job as a designer was working for an airline magazine, for a company that published many airline magazines. Go figure, the magazine was created for, and the company that produced these no longer exists. But I did learn more. I perfected my pay stub skills. And then landed a job at HarperCollins Children's Books in their marketing department doing design. So that was really my first leap into children's publishing.
And was that just random? Like, yeah, that year I applied to 12 places in 12 different industries, and that's the one I got?
No, I was sort of zero, because I was already in New York at that point. I was kind of zeroing in. Like, I realized, like, magazine publishing was not my thing. I wanted more of a lifespan to the projects, like, you know, and also there was an insecurity element to it. This is the era of when, you know, a magazine would be redesigned and everybody would get fired. The whole editorial and design staff would get fired. And I thought, you know what, that's a little too stressful for me. I think books might be, you know, you get to sit with a project a little bit longer. Maybe that, I was terrified. And also, I didn't really think my personality fit so well into the high in fashion magazine, very competitive magazine world. So I directed myself toward books and was lucky enough to get this job with a woman who taught me so much. And it was right around the time that everyone was getting their first desktop publishing systems set up. So she was learning computers and I was learning at the same time. And I still had this background with like the traditional form of design and production and all that stuff. So it was kind of a great time to learn and grow as the industry was changing. So skipping ahead, then I moved from marketing down to book design and did a lot of package design for an imprint for their children's division that we did a lot of what we called Book Plus. Back in the day, it was taking an existing book and creating a merchandise product that went with it. Sometimes it was a doll, sometimes it was bunny slippers, stuff like that.
I had Goodnight Moon in my head, so that applies. Okay.
Goodnight Moon slippers, that was one of the things. So a whole bunch of things like that. And then
wait, did you actually design that?
I designed the slipper package. and I think when it was I don't remember which, they've had so many anniversaries for that book, one of the anniversary seals for that book.
Nice.
Yeah. You know.
That's amazing.
Yeah. you didn't wear them as slippers, though, did you?
I've just, you know, it's one of those books where I've got two little kids, and, like, you get so many copies of that, and then, of course, you read it a billion times, and just, like, the natural, like, thing you want to market.
I see. Okay. All right. So then I worked at another publishing company for a brief time that wasn't quite, sort of a similar kind of work, but not quite as fulfilling, and found myself looking for another job. And, you know, all this time, I'd been working for art directors. I was sort of on a career track and thinking, you know, I really like doing the work. I don't think I necessarily want to be an art director and supervising people. That was something I really had thought about. Like, I like doing the stuff. I like, maybe it was meetings. I never really liked meetings. So I like sort of that, a little bit of autonomy, doing my own thing. And so that was something I've always sort of battled with. And so then I landed a job in a major art museum here in the city where they had a small publishing group. And in publishing, there's a term called packaging, which you might be familiar with, where you take an idea and a packager will propose that idea to a larger publisher who may buy into it, and then it gets into a broader distribution. And we did that with the museum's collection. We would propose ideas and create children's books and adult books and all kinds of things. There was the publishing manager, there were two editors, an editorial assistant, and then me. I was the art department. And so I was kind of like designer, art director, all that stuff. And then we would take these ideas, book proposals, to the large international festivals to show to the publishers, international publishers, most of them in New York or in the US in the end, but to see if they wanted to buy into it, and we would produce them. So the editors would work on the text, I would do all the design work, and then we'd use the visuals from the collection as assets. You know, it was kind of amazing. It's sort of a wonderful model. And I did that for 10 years, and it was an amazing job. And I had so much freedom and again, doing all the stuff. I wasn't on a corporate ladder. I was doing the nitty gritty and then also working with this creative team, proposing ideas.
So you said two things in there that really resonate with me personally, but I think with other people, which is you ended up with a job where you did the work, you did creative work, and you had independence. I ended up in a corporate job like that, which was wonderful. A lot of people I find get to the point maybe where you are, where you're bouncing around to jobs, you're in a job and you're like, this is not ideal. Mm-hmm. And the only way up is to like, that sort of thing. But they get stuck in it. So one that you recognized, these kind of almost softer things that you want. And I remember having jobs and you're like, dude, you have a job. You have health insurance. You have this, like, you don't quit. You don't leave. You don't look. Was it hard for you even then to go to other jobs and then say, I'm going to look for this other one? Because that's almost like, I just remember being in jobs. And if you were looking on your own or you weren't like drinking the Kool-Aid, it was like weird.
Yeah, it's almost totally counterintuitive, right? And it's really, you're not supposed to do that. But I just, something in my heart was just saying, you know, I'm just not suited for that. You know, I'm also not a parent. I knew that I was not, my personality is not suited to be, not personality. I just never had this drive to have kids. I just knew it. My friends we'd be walking down the sidewalk, they'd see a kid in a stroller and say, oh, I want one. But that was such a foreign idea to me. I mean, I love kids. I work in children's books primarily. So, you know, it's not like I don't like them. I just knew it wasn't right for me. Yeah. And I don't know. It seemed really a little irrational, to tell you the truth, to not feel like I wanted to do that. Like there's something wrong with me. But I had to always find that this is a very specific fit.
You know? It's just cool to think too, because part of what you said resonates too, where you're like, well, I wanted a career where there was safety. And then it's just really inspiring to see like, I was in those jobs, but they weren't fulfilling. So I made a switch and I found a job for a decade that they hit all the right buttons. I just love that.
Yes. And then it didn't hit the buttons. It was a wonderful job, and I had started taking some continuing ed classes at the School of Visual Arts, because to be honest, like going back to my childhood, pictures were always my favorite thing. I always drew, and then something happened in my early 20s when I started to work, and I stopped drawing and I stopped doing illustrations, but I always sort of thought that was where my heart lay. And in the back of my mind, maybe I'd never had a biological clock about having kids, but I had a clock in my head about, you know, if you want to see if you can do this illustration thing, you need to figure that out. You don't have a finite amount of time. You got to make a decision at a certain point. And I've been taking these continuing ed classes. I think a couple of children's book things, and I don't know. There were sort of random classes that didn't really lead to anything other than they made me love illustration even more and realize that I'd been missing out and kind of silenced a part of myself for a long time. So then something happened at work where, ironically, they wanted me to illustrate something, and I did not want to do that because it was not my job description, and I kind of knew the business enough to know that I wasn't going to be compensated properly for it or retain any kinds of rights to it as an artist should, as an illustrator should. It became a thing, and then I realized I just didn't belong there anymore. It'd been 10 years and I really needed to make a change. So I started looking for different jobs, and well, here's a truth bomb. I had a lot of help in my next stage, a lot of help. I remember after having a very difficult conversation with my boss, talking to my mom and saying, you know, I don't know what to do. I'm at a crossroads. I could go back into traditional publishing and work my way up the ladder, or I could see if I can figure out if I want to do this illustration thing, you know? So I hope I don't cry when I tell you this. If my mother listens to this, she's gonna probably cry. So the next day, I'm at my job and I'm thinking like, well, what the hell am I gonna do? I need to start looking for work, for other jobs, and I guess art director jobs. And my mom called and she said, well, you know, your dad and I talked about it, and if you know, you talked about this going back to school for I had said there's a graduate program I want to try to apply for illustration at the School of Visual Arts. And she said, you know, your dad and I talked about it, and if you come up with a plan, we'll help you make it happen. Oh my God! I mean, this was incredibly generous. I couldn't believe it. I was almost 40. And this, my mother says this to me. So I came up with a plan, and I applied to this program. At the same time, I was looking for jobs. Actually had two people very interested in hiring me for those jobs. But in the midst of that, I got into this MFA program at the School of Visual Arts, which is kind of legendary. It's all about personal voice and finding your illustration, your visual voice through illustration. Along with writing and various other things. So I got into that. I was the oldest person there.
Well, I remember one of my best friends is a professional photographer, and she went to SVA in the early 90s, and she was a video major, I think. Uh-huh. So I'd visit her there, and I remember I think there were multiple buildings, obviously, but it was this wacky New York in the 90s, interesting people. It was very open at the time. It was like, you know, it was like Pearl Payton. It was ancient building, but there's all this creative stuff going on. It was just like, not, you know, just this really interesting place. Is that the place that you're at, where it's you and all these weirdo like kids?
Well, this was only 10 years ago. So,
but maybe it's still like that. I don't even know. It's been so long since I've been near that.
Well, it was my first real experience of immersion in an art school. So, yeah, maybe, I guess. But I mostly thought, like, I'm just this wacky, older, middle-aged person who's now going to school with people I really could be their mom or their mom, you know, a bunch of people who are right out of undergrad. So, yeah, it was so great. It was, to me, having worked for almost 20 years at that point, it was like, I always say it was like recess in a way. I mean, I worked my tail off. I worked so hard that I got a partial scholarship my second year. I just, I mean, it was so great for me because I was making a clean break between my previous career into my what was going to be my new career.
You don't have to get too specific here, but it's a really important thing you said about, you know, your mom, where she's saying, like, if you make a plan, we will help you make it happen. So that, of course, is amazing for all the right reasons. What, and again, it doesn't have to be very specific, but like, what did a plan have to look like? And I think this is actually a really critical thing. There's so many people in life who are like, there's been a book in me and I want to make it happen, whatever. And you, you trust them, you believe them. And then you maybe try to help, or you're like, well, what's the plan or what would it look like? And there's nothing. There's no effort to say, well, I'm doing research and I think here's a couple paths or here's what it could. There's just the will, the, oh, I have this dream, nothing. What was a sufficient enough plan for you or for them or anything to just even roadmap that out to where they could say, look, we're going to help?
Yeah, I think it was being responsible to myself and their goodwill, number one. And really just putting as much as I could into the whole application process. And really, I took even more classes. This was over the course of a year that I did not tell them that I was planning on leaving. One or two of my friends at work knew I was leaving. But I knew when the application was due. I knew around when I might find out if I got in. And I knew that I had to give myself time to build up a portfolio because I really hadn't done that. So, that was part of it. I really laid out the plan, like, okay, when am I going to have enough bulk of stuff to show my best work or where I'm at least. I went in and met with the chair who incidentally, I now teach in that program. So I teach with the chair and I remember showing, I'd taken a life drawing class and which has never really been my thing. And he said to me, let's take that stuff out. That's really not helping anything. Which was a revelation, but also like also put a little bee in my bonnet. Like, oh, I guess I'm not that good at that stuff. But okay,
that's great though to have a mentor to do that.
Oh my gosh, incredible! Yeah, and then realizing like, oh, this is not that kind of a program necessarily. I mean, everyone has to have a certain foundation in what they're doing, but it's more about what you're bringing to your work as a person and how your personality and sensibility comes through in your visual work. So I think I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but in terms of the planning, that was sort of, that's what I remember most is just really trying to figure out like, you know, it came down to expenses too. Like what do I need? What am I, all that stuff. But like, but really, you know, and at that point I had actually already bought an apartment. So I had like, my expenses were not terrible in terms of renting. It would have been a lot worse.
Interesting.
But that was good too. I mean, the benefits of when I managed to buy this apartment and stuff, definitely helped. Cause I think it would be harder to these days. I mean, the school is so expensive now. I mean, schools in general are incredibly expensive.
Well,
so.
Wait, cause I'm assuming we don't have to do the math right up to it, but if you're saying generally 10 years ago, we're talking about post housing bubble crash.
The housing bubble happened while I was in school.
Okay.
Yeah. Just in time for me to come out of school for that.
Oh, okay. Cause I'm always think like, this is something that, that I always feel, which is, cause I was in the .com boom 1.0 and I saw what happened after that. And then I started my company like 10 years ago. And I felt it was a great time to start during a really, really bad recession because no one expects anything of you. Oh, there's no pressure. Yeah. So if you fumble for a long time, you don't have that pressure. Everybody, how's it going? Because everyone is just trying to get by. Oh, and that can be a creative gift at times, even though it's unfortunate.
Yeah. I mean, I don't remember thinking that so much as I knew that like I knew I was going to have to survive or support myself out of school as a graphic designer. More than an illustrator, because if anybody knew me in children's books, which was where my work just naturally goes. If anyone knew me in children's publishing, it was as a designer, but they barely knew me as that because I was working, you know, adjacent to the real publishing, children's publishing industry. Yeah. So I knew I'd have to support myself as a graphic designer, and I definitely was doing more of that work the first several years out of school than the illustration. And then now it's sort of, you know, changed. Well, now teaching has kind of taken over the graphic design part of you know, there's the illustration and then there's the you know what I'm saying? Teaching took over the graphic design, and the illustration is going along, but more of that is, yeah,
That's a big point we could touch upon a little later on too, but it's the idea that having a career in the arts in general, it's often not just I do X, period.
Exactly.
It's, yes. Well, I do X, the main thing, but it's a weird industry. I also do this. I also do that. Yeah. I also do this.
Absolutely. And there's another truth bomb, which is one of our friend Lori's favorite terms, right?
Oh, yeah. I always just, yeah.
Yeah, I actually just said this in class the other day. I always think it's, I stress it, illustration, if you're an editorial illustrator, if you're an institutional illustrator or children's books, whatever you're doing, everybody's got a patchwork. You have to have your fingers in a lot of different areas to make it work, because it's not a great sustainable career, to be perfectly honest. A lot of people who are in children's books have a side gig in school visits, and now I'm starting to do more of that. Now that I've had books out for a while and they're getting a little bit of footing, I'm being asked to do more and more of that kind of stuff, which is great. It's another revenue stream.
And that's just for listeners, that's where you'll do a visit to a school, you'll do a reading, you'll do a little workshop, and you get paid.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And then there are actually workshops for adults, too, that I've been asked to do work in for, like the Highlights Foundation. I'm now doing, this will be the second year I'm doing a workshop with alongside James Ransom and a bunch of, he's a children's book author, illustrator. Also teaches at Syracuse University. We developed this program for Highlights, and we're going to do it again this year. And we did it last year. It was a great success. So, that kind of thing. So the teaching is, I do very little graphic design now. I still love it and I create projects for myself, but, for my own illustration business. But it's, you've got to have a lot of different plates in the air, balls in the air, plates in the air. Spinning.
Depends on how dangerous you want it to be. Exactly. Balls exactly. Bounce.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you went through and got your degree, and then you, I'm just gonna, is right. Like then you went back more into graphic design because you knew you could get a job. You still weren't fully into, it wasn't like, dude, on this date, I made a shift. And after that, it was all illustration.
No. And I always really enjoyed it. The mechanics of it. I was doing freelance work, though. Yeah. So I was freelancing in various children's publishers. Actually, my old employer was hiring me to do work. I still occasionally get work from them. So I never really sought it out beyond the people that already knew me as a graphic designer, because I didn't really want to emphasize that that's not my business. I'm selling myself as an illustrator. But if that makes any sense.
Does that make the point that of the importance of having a network?
Yes. And not being a jerk too, I think.
It's a related point.
And you know, knowing your stuff. But I think of myself as being pretty easy to work with. So I enjoy the people that I've worked with. For the most part. So there are relationships I maintain. Yeah.
What is that? There's a saying, I don't know if you know it, but it was something like, I always think there's like a carpenter or a plumber, but I think it applies to everything. Like you hire someone who's either, and there's like three things. It's like they show up on time, they do good work, you like them, you can't have all three. So it's like you hire this one's got like two out of three.
Right.
Meaning that sometimes you don't hire the best plumber, but they show up and they're pleasant.
Right.
That sort of a thing. I think that's a part of a lot of networking, which is like, I don't know the best, but I know Dan.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is what's good about that. He might be a good fit, that sort of thing.
Right. Right, exactly. And in illustration, it's really important, especially, you know, it's a very collaborative process, especially books that you have to be able to take feedback, give feedback, be flexible. Schedules can be very nebulous, and they can ask you things, you know, for things that you really weren't expecting. And so you have to just roll with the punches. Sometimes you get that email where, you know, it's it really throws you off course, and maybe it makes you a little angry, but you have to just, I give myself a little distance from it. Maybe you don't read it for an hour, that kind of stuff. You know, it's just learning all those things about yourself that you have to do present yourself best, put your best face forward.
So if you're freelancing at that time, that means you're working from home?
Yes, I was working from home. Well, one job I did go in 1 or 2 days a week. Yeah.
How is that? Because I started working from home at the corporate job I had, and I loved it. And then a decade ago, I went full time. And I remember before I did it, I used to think, dude, everyone should do this. And then after I did it, I realized not everyone's going to like this. There's, you know, all the obvious things. There's no structure. There's no validation. There's the overlapping of life. Was that a challenging transition to manage everything about your time and your work, or did it suit you perfectly?
Absolutely. It really was. And actually, I was nervous because when I had been in grad school, every student gets their own studio space for the 2 years, and that was my first experience being in a studio with other artists. And you know, we had like cubicles, so high cubicles with like and stuff. So it was like you weren't on top of each other necessarily, but it was a great, vibrant environment where you were feeding off of each other and all your ideas and stuff. And then suddenly, I had to be working from home again, and number one, all the stuff that I had, you know, I'm in a New York City apartment, it's not huge, and move all the stuff back and deal with that. And then I had to figure out how to create structure for my days. And so actually one thing I talk to my students about a lot is, personal projects and how they can create a structure for yourself. Especially when I come to them every once in a while when I'm certainly at that stage in my career, but when I'm feeling a little bit ungrounded with my work and I'm not feeling connected to it or whatever, it always seems like it's time for me to come up with a personal project. So in that stage in my career, when I was right out of school doing all this design work, I had spent 2 years studying illustration, and I thought, oh my God, I could so easily fall back on those habits I had in my 20s and 30s where I wasn't drawing. I just spent all this money and like all this time. I need to be really careful and I have to keep the practice up. I created this illustration practice. So I came up with a project and I created rules for myself. Maybe as a designer, I always need like structure. So I created some rules, external rules, which was I would do this project for a year. It had to fit into my workday. If I was, going to offsite to work on design for my design clients, it needed to be fairly easy, and also needed to come sort of naturally be part of my sensibility and show hopefully my sense of humor and, my illustration in its best light. So I realized that when I was doodling, you know, those moments when I would sit down to draw something and I would just make some marks on the page, that I was drawing a lot of birds. And I thought, oh, well, maybe there's something there. And I decided to do a bird a day. And it became this year-long project that started out just as like birds of different colors and thing, you know, nothing very concrete. And then it became illustrations of birds related to visual puns, and you know, the English language has so many references to birds, and it became a blog that I then shared with a lot of people, and got a few other bloggers to write about, and led to my first book project, and it has a very long, silly name. it was called Ornithological. Is ornithology is the study of birds. Ornithological, you get it. I put a B in there. It becomes a pun. So that was this really great thing. I somehow figured out subconsciously, I did not know it was going to turn into this thing that would provide me such an outlet for my sensibility, but also would lead to anything really that concrete. Because people were following me. I didn't have, not a ton of followers. And this is actually before Instagram was a thing.
Yeah.
So this was Blogger. And I just thought these were kooky bird people word people who were following it. And there I was sitting at my freelance job one day, and I got an email from an art director at Candlewick saying she had been following my birds, and they had this book project, this that was a collection of poems written by the current children's poet laureate. I didn't even know there was a children's poet laureate, J. Patrick Lewis, and that was the first book I ever illustrated, called World Rat Day. So, so I remember getting that email at my freelance job and standing up and saying to my friend across the cubicle, the wall, like, Simon, I can't believe it. I just got offered a book. This is crazy. And that was a really great day where I thought, oh, there's so many lessons in this year that I created for myself.
Totally. I like how there were rules. I like how the rules are not even, they're not obvious either. They're what worked for you. Because one could say, can you do it for a year? I'm going to challenge myself with a big goal. And you were like, nuh-uh. I'm going to make it really easy so it will work. And I'm going to focus on something I really want to do.
Yeah.
And I love how that you just found what made sense for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was really lucky. I realized that what was probably best about the project was that it had rules, but it had room to grow and room to expand.
Ooh, love that.
Which was really important, and it actually just now we're at school where our students are starting their semester long book project where they have to illustrate and author a book of their own, and that's what we keep saying to them. Draw what you want to draw. Your best work is going to be an extension of you, and you need to create a project for yourself that is loose enough.
Can I ask you a question about that? Because you're a teacher and you're one, your own experience, but that's classic writing advice to you, like write what you know. And yet what I find is so many people are torn on the inside between seeing what works, and especially now with Instagram and Amazon and all the things. Do you find that that's challenging for your students to get their head wrapped around that? Or if they're that far along, they're in art school already, they're already coming with these ideas, they just want permission?
I'd say it's probably a mix of both. By the time we start talking about books with them, they've already been hearing us say, draw what you want to draw, because it's really, we really want them expressing themselves through their art, their personalities, because the theory being, and this is true of writers too, if you're sharing your most personal, not your most personal, but if you're sharing work that is an extension of you, it will be probably your best work. Most likely it's the most natural stuff. For me, in my work, it's that I always make this analogy, which doesn't make a lot of sense to people, but I used to play softball growing up, and I've always been a big baseball fan. I was never a marathon runner. I can go from home plate to first base, of short distances. And actually, that's almost an extension of how I make my art. I do very sort of gestural paintings. I can't overwork things. Like an oil painter reworks things, or a painter who works in acrylics does glazes over and over and over again. They're building things up. Mine has to be a gesture I make. I put it aside. I do the same thing. I figure out like what's the purest gesture of what I'm trying. How am I to explain it? I'm trying to be as unself-conscious as I can in my work. And for some people that comes across where they're building something up. For me, it has to be very basic, simple shapes of things. Where was I leading with that?
I had asked you about just, people kind of leading with what's within them. So you're definitely bringing it back to your work. Yeah. Was publishing the first book everything you dreamed it would be?
No, I was actually just listening to, I think, your most recent podcast the other day and thinking, wow, I thought a lot of that stuff too. I mean, you need to do a lot of your own legwork getting people interested in things. I thought, oh gosh, this is going to be great. I'm going to be, I don't know, I probably thought I was going to be interviewed on the radio for it. You know, this is so important. It's the Children's Poet Laureate, all this stuff. Like, wow, what a great debut. And actually then soon realized, when I was asking questions about like what kinds of marketing strategies they were gonna use for it, I wasn't getting a lot of answers. And then I realized, in speaking to some of my friends from my past jobs who were in marketing, that, you know, I really shouldn't expect too much, and that maybe I could make up some of the, you know, the gaps, fill in some of the gaps. So yeah, it was exciting. And I tried to make a big deal of it as best I could, and did things like, I created a book trailer. I taught myself how to create book trailers using the computer and using my art, and then started sharing it myself. Like, I figured out sharing it myself and then sharing it with like librarians and people who could generate more interest in the book. So it seemed like there was this big machine behind this book, but actually, they, not to say that the publisher didn't support it, they completely did. I mean, they made a poster, and you know, it got on some nice lists and stuff. But like, the thing that I had in my mind about all of the strategies they would put into it, it was really kind of naive, to be honest. So
yeah, that's something that comes across a lot in my interviews, as you mentioned, and I think it's important for people to hear. And I always say it with total empathy: a publisher does so much. But for something like marketing, there's only so much they can do, and that leaves an opportunity for authors and illustrators to kind of do something interesting with it. And it sounds like that's what you're doing.
Yeah, and actually, because my first job was in marketing, although it was design, I kind of knew a few little tricks in the trade. Like, you know, I knew I could probably get away with a few things, making them, and also being a designer, I can design things well for my book. So, you know, it sort of looks like there was a more seamless campaign behind it, sort of.
Yeah,
and campaign
that.
Stretching the word, believe me.
Campaign in air quotes.
It was like, I think I had a party that I arranged with a friend at a bookstore, and I had this book trailer, and, you know, but I said, I would send it out, the book trailer, to librarians, and I say, hey, my name's Anna Raff, and I've just done this illustrated this book that comes out, and would you take a minute and 21 seconds to watch this book trailer? I like to say, I'm just asking, like, so meekly, it's just a minute and 21 seconds, you know. And then they started to share it, and I thought, oh, this is fantastic. That's what you do. You just have to sort of be polite and nice, but then as a result, people think that, on the outside, think that you've got this like all these strategies behind you that are official, but you know, I really kind of tweaked it. I continue to do that. So
that's an interesting point. Is what you're saying there that people can see, well, you've done this great launch, show me your launch plan. And you're like, I did a few things, but I mean, I'm cobbling this together as it goes, and there's no plan. There's just,
yeah,
spaghetti at the wall.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I remember I was my husband, who wasn't my husband at the time, we were planning a trip right around when the book was launching, and I said, I really don't know if I'm supposed to be around, to be honest. Like, I'm not sure, should we go on vacation or not? Like, and then in the end we did, because it was a big birthday for him, so we sort of had to. But there was no reason for me to be in the country. I didn't have to be here.
You weren't home manning the phone?
Yeah, I'm just waiting for NPR to call, right? No, that was not going to happen. So, it's just really funny how you have to sort of keep your expectations in check, and yet, you know, you want to be available also, but it doesn't. It was very amusing. Looking back, it's amusing.
How many books do you have now?
I think I'm just about done with the 13th book, I think.
And how many years would this have been?
The first book came out in 2013. Yeah.
It sounds like a lot of books in a short period of time.
It is a lot of books. Yeah, it's but it's I guess being busy. I'm not particularly busy right now, which is kind of weird. But it is a really good lesson on how to juggle projects and what stages of projects that what they need to be in. Like I can't be working on a book that's in final art along with another book in final art. Like I can't do two books at the same time. If they're in sketches, the very early stages for me, and then I have another book that's in final art, it's two different kinds of thinking. So that took a lot of juggling, like figuring out how to make sure that things didn't crash up against each other too much.
Can I ask about something you just said? And like, well, so you're saying I'm not super busy right now. And what I find, like, I saw this quote the other day. I'm a huge fan of G.E. Smith, the guitarist, and he's wonderful in interviews. And an interview I was watching is talking about that, which is like, there's times you're really busy, and then there's times where you're just, the phone's not ringing for months. Mm-hmm. And the guy is interviewing as a musician as well, and he's like, oh yeah. Is that something that... I think a lot of people don't know that. People feel like everything you say, it's like they're viewing the story as this like upward trajectory thing. You do this, you do that, you get the book deals, whatever. And that it's the validation, the path is now set, and then there's only growth. Mm-hmm. How do you talk, and maybe it's how you talk to students about it, but I'm curious for myself too, like that idea that things are cyclical, things are random. Mm-hmm. You have these phases that are way too busy, then phases that are way too not busy, and that... Yeah. Over a long period of time, it becomes a career.
Yeah. Well, a lot of planning is important, just being prepared for it. I mean, I say this is. I'm welcoming this because there's a lot of things I want to be doing right now that I didn't have room for in the last year or so. So I like that I have this space to kind of think and take a pause and. I'm actually trying to do more writing myself. So that's, huh?
I said yay.
Yay for writing. And also feeling like I've done a ton of things several books that I didn't feel personally connected to. And the way that I'm going to be connected to books is if I create, them on my own, the content is, for me, the writing and the illustrating. So that's what I'm really trying to focus on. And I feel like I just gave a disservice to the books some of the books I've done. I don't mean that there wasn't part of me in them, but there's something about illustrating someone else's words and then illustrating words that you write as well. And I think the designer in me gravitates more easily to illustrating someone else's words. Because as a I'm used to as a visual communicator, putting word and image together is more natural. But it coming, taking other people's words is more natural to me than my own. Using my own words. I'm not saying this well. But,
no, I get what you mean. Where you're given something to react to, and that creates a whole creative thing. And the challenge too, if the project is all yours.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. It's like so much more ideas and doubt and editing and, well, I don't want to kill my darling, but that, it's just so much more complex.
Yes, exactly. And being reactive, that's actually, I'm glad you used that word, because I think some of the design work, it can be very reactive. You're taking other people's content and communicating it visually, right? So with illustration, my books where I've illustrated other people's words, it can be very much a similar thing. And actually for this reason, I'm taking my first writing class since college coming up. I'm looking forward to that. And I just went to a conference where I hung out with a lot more writers and learned a lot of things.
Writers are awesome, right?
Right. Yes. Writers are awesome and they go through the same crap, if I can use the language. We all have different tools that we go to get through the bumpy spots, right?
Yeah.
But they're sort of the similar things, One of the ones I just learned recently, which I thought was great, was as an illustrator of children's books, sometimes people say, oh, a good, great way to get to know your character and do a character study visually of them is, you know, you draw the person, but also, or animal or monster, whatever it is, draw their bedroom. So you get to know where they live and what occupies them in their off time. Even if it's something that doesn't wind up in the book, it's a great way to get to know your character. And then writers, this writer suggested interviewing your characters, but not only just interview you as the interviewer, but have somebody else interview you and you are the character, which Ooh. I think is really great. Really great.
Love that.
Yeah. Yeah, and Crystal Allen, I want to give her credit for that. Crystal Allen was that gem who we shared that at the conference I went to. So
we covered a lot about transitions and creative shifts. Is there anything I haven't asked about that you think we definitely need to cover in these themes?
Well, you know what? I have a theme for 2020, which is to give myself silence. I have not been giving myself space and silence to let my brain think enough about writing and creating and being in touch with things that are important to me, because the world is a mess and it was invading my quiet time too much in the last couple of years, and I'm trying to compartmentalize the noise, allow myself a certain amount of noise, and I want to be, you know, keep up to date with what's going on in the world, but I was finding that it was sort of being a little too invasive. So my theme of 2020 is finding some quiet. Yeah.
I love that. I love that a lot. And I think, I mean, I can see how much that would fit into everything you're sharing here. Like, I love the theme where you're like, oh, I'm taking writing classes. I'm doing this, where it's not just, I had a creative shift at this period. It's that you're always growing and evolving. And I love that idea of giving yourself the gift of space.
Yeah. I'm trying to look at it as a, it did make me very nervous when I started shutting off podcasts, because suddenly it was silence. I was a little scared, but now I'm getting to the point where I kind of crave it. So I had lost that, and I'm getting back.
I love it. Thank you so much for taking us through all this. It's just so inspiring for me.
Well, thank you. Thank you for all the great questions.
You can find Anna Raff at annaraff.com, A-N-N-A-R-A-F-F. On Twitter, she's Anna Raff NYC. On Instagram, she's just Anna Raff. And you can find her books wherever books are sold, including the book World Rat Day, The Day the Universe Exploded My Head, Light Waves, If I Were a Kangaroo, and many, many others. My name again is Dan Blank. You can find me on social media at Dan Blank, on my website, wegrowmedia.com. Thank you so much for listening until the end.